But this photo actually encapsulates our view of, I mean, what come to be our view of the Samaritan woman at the well. So I'm just curious what you see. Because this is how she's become to be read and interpreted.
I don't think she was carrying water.
Doesn't look like she was carrying water, yeah, right? Okay. Which is curious, right? We've taken the toil, her actual, what she's doing, she's working, we don't even see that with her anymore, yeah.
It looks like a scene from Woodstock.
Looks like a scene from Woodstock, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's putting on some sort of makeup. Like, she's definitely have a mirror, and she's, like, putting on lipstick or something, yeah.
She's self-absorbed.
So you see self-absorbed, okay. Like, yeah, there's a sense where she is focused on herself, yeah.
It's the blending of the old and the new.
Okay, so blending of contemporary, our contemporary views on this ancient story. Sure. And somebody mentioned Woodstock, like, so from the vantage point of somebody in the 1950s, right, put yourself back in the vantage point of the 1950s, if you were raised and born in the 1950s and you see this picture, you know, there's an assessment that's being made about her, and none of us are saying it, but it's obvious, right? I mean, I think for many of us there is a judgment that's being made about this woman, right? Or am I off about that? Does nobody hear and see the judgment that's being made about this woman, right?
She's a bad girl.
Okay.
How come all the comments are about the woman and not the man?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Jesus has long hair, right? You know, but yeah. Because, and that's specifically the focus in this story is on, she's the bad girl, right? This is a story about the bad girl and how Jesus comes in and saves her. Basically. I think there is, part of the reason why that's developed is, and it comes from just the character. When I was in Peace, the character of what happens at wells. When I was at Peace Corps in West Africa, I lived right next to a well. And, you know, when you go to a well, you have to carry water back to your house. And you're carrying the water for your whole needs. Like, if you imagine how much water we consume during a day, it's gallons of water. I mean, in traditional societies, you're not carrying that much water, but it's a lot of water that you're having to carry, and it's hard work. So you're not going to do it during the middle of the day. When it's hot, you're going to do it in the early morning or in the evening when it's you know, less. And usually it's not something you want to do by yourself. So you get all your friends together, all your friends come together, and you go to the well together in the early morning. And then often at wells, so there's, you know, often wells are places when the women all come together and they're all talking and they're socializing. It makes the work easier. And often what happened for me when I was in this village in Benin, when the men would be going out to their fields, they passed by the women, and there'd be a lot of flirtatious banter that would happen between the men, women at the well and the men who were passing by. And so, you know, wells are social. There's a lot of energy, and sometimes it's a kind of flirtatious sexual energy that's happening around a well. She's by herself. And she's coming in the middle of the day. Right? So for a lot of folks, it's like, okay, where's her community? Where are the people around her? It seems that she has a certain kind of stigma. And she's not part of the other women who are coming earlier in the day. And it seems that stigma is related to the fact that Jesus later will say she's had 5 husbands, and the man she's with is not currently her husband. And somehow, over the course of time, this little piece, you know, and later the disciples, when Jesus is there with this woman, they come back and they're like, what are you doing by yourself with this woman? Somehow we've associated the fact that she's had 5 husbands as being her fault. Thing is in that culture, a woman could not divorce a man. A man could divorce a woman. A man could divorce a woman for any reason. I mean, there were 2 rabbinical schools, but one of the rabbinical schools was a man could divorce a woman if he displeased her in any instance. And often what happened is the men would divorce their wives and as they got older and then upgrade to a younger model. I mean, seriously, that happened. And it was not fair to the woman. It left her very vulnerable. Economically vulnerable, right? And so here is a woman who has been abandoned by 5 men. And she gets the stigma and the men don't. She's the one who's the bad girl, and the men aren't the bad boys. Right? That's how we play into this, the judgment and contempt of this woman. And this story is about judgment and contempt. It's about the judgment and contempt around sexuality and gender, but it's also about judgment and contempt about religion. And we miss that point too, because we know her as a Samaritan woman, but for us that doesn't really mean anything. We know that there's the good Samaritan, but we don't understand the kind of tension between Jews and Samaritans anymore. And the reality I'll unpack a little bit about that before we get back to Jesus and the woman. The story begins at Jacob's well. And Jacob was the father of 12 sons who became the 12 tribes of Israel. And so this story begins at the foundation of this, at the place where Israel itself begins. And Israel is divided between northern tribes and southern tribes and, all the way up to Galilee. And there was a point in Israel history where the northern tribes decided, well, they're going to worship on top of this mountain, Mount Gerizim. And they built their place of worship on the top of Mount Gerizim. Meanwhile, the southern tribes had their place of worship already in David's city down in Jerusalem. And so this tension arose. Okay, are we going to worship in what's the right place of worship? And the Jews said, basically, no, we have the right place of worship, and you guys are wrong. It is what happened. And the Jews had contempt for the Samaritans. It's kind of like Roman Catholics saying, well, the right, where things are happening is in the Vatican, and it's like Anglicans saying, well, no, where things are happening is Westminster Abbey. Or it's like one group of Christians who are saying, well, we're the real Christians and those people over there aren't real Christians. That's really what's happening, because the Samaritans they're cousins to Jews. They're very similar to they are inheritors of the Jewish faith as well. But the Jews would not have anything to do with them. And so Jesus, and when you go from Galilee to Jerusalem, there are paths that, the shortest route is right through Samaria, but there are all kinds of paths that go around Samaria because the Jews didn't want to have anything to do with Samaritans. And the Jews felt, no, I'm not going to be tainted by those people. So Jesus does this striking thing. He decides to go through Samaria already, which is a bold act on his part. And it's the middle of the day. They get to this village called Sychar. He sits down. He's tired, which is an interesting detail. Jesus is tired, so he sits by the well, and the disciples go on ahead of him. And this woman who's bearing the stigma and shame in her village comes up to the well, and there's a man sitting there. And as she gets closer, she sees it's a Jewish man sitting there. And she's by herself, and he's by himself. And she doesn't know who this guy is. She doesn't have a clue. All she knows is that he's a Jew. And all she knows is that Jews have contempt for her and her people. And so when she's approaching that well, what is she thinking? What would any woman in that position do? Like, you're in an isolated place, you're by yourself, and here's a man. So she goes up to the well, and she starts to take out her water, and Jesus says to her, "Give me a drink." And her response is, "You're a Jew. Why are you asking me, a Samaritan, for water? You have contempt on me. Why are you asking?" And Jesus is like, "Well, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that's asking, I would be giving you living water and you wouldn't have to go get water." What does that sound like? Well, if you knew what a gift of God I am, and I could give you living water. She doesn't know who Jesus is. That sounds like a come on line, quite frankly. And she says, "Oh, really? You're the gift of God, and you're going to give me living water? Really? You don't have a bucket." And this well is deep. And I think there's a double entendre there. She's like, you're not man enough. She's like, are you like Jacob? Are you more than Jacob? Are you more than Jacob's sons? She's like, get off your high horse, Jewish guy. Right? I think that's what she's... That would make sense to me, given the dynamics of what's happening. And Jesus says to her... I'm going to get my glasses here so I get it right. So Jesus says to her, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But those who drink of the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give them will become in them a spring of water gushing up to eternal life. So already she's like, oh, okay, so maybe, I don't know what's going on here, but this doesn't sound like what I thought it was. And then she says, sir, give me this water so that I may never be thirsty and have to keep coming to draw the water. And I hear her weariness. I hear her tiredness. I hear how tired she is of bearing the stigma, how tired she is of being by herself as she's coming to the well, how tired she is of this whole situation. And she's like, you know what? Yeah, good. Living water that flows eternally, so I don't have to keep coming here and carrying this water, so I don't have to keep coming here and doing this thing. I don't know if she really believes him at that point, but she's giving voice to how hard it is for her. And then Jesus does this really curious thing. Like in that moment of the conversation, he says, go call your husband and come back. Which is not a natural sequitur, right? It's not the natural flow of the conversation at this point. He's actually beginning to say, he's beginning to point to the source of her pain. He's beginning to point to the source of her stigma by talking about her married life. And really, that's not what she wants to be talking about with a stranger at a well. And so she says to him, I don't have a husband. I don't really want to be talking about it with you. And he says, you are right in saying I have no husband. For I see that you've had five husbands, and the one you have now is not your husband. I hear what you're saying is true. Her experience with all these men has been other people have had such contempt and judgment for her. And I think for the first time, she hears a man talking about the reality of her life without judgment, without contempt. And I imagine that there's a long moment of silence at that point. And then she says, okay, sir, I see that you are a prophet. But there's still this thing. What about you being a Jew? I see that you're not going to judge me because of my relational, you know, my relational life. But are you still going to judge me about my religion? Because she says to him, our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you say the place where people must worship is in Jerusalem. Are you still going to say that I don't have real faith? Are you going to say that just because your people worship in Jerusalem and my people worship on this mountain, that I don't have real religion? And Jesus says to her, woman, believe me. The hour is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. But the hour is coming and is now here where the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father seeks such as those to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. I mean, it's a profound paradigm shift. He's saying, okay, this whole thing about Jew and Samaritan and the division about what's the right place to worship, he's saying, no, there's a different way. We're not going to worship in this place or that place, but it's about worshiping, you know, the God who is spirit and true, like, and worship him in truth. And then she says a really curious thing. She says, I know that Messiah is coming. The Jews were expecting a Messiah. The Samaritans are expecting a Messiah. And then she says, when he comes, he will proclaim all things to us. And Jesus says to her, I am. In the Greek, that's what he says. Ego eimi, I am. Which is exactly what God said when Moses was at the burning bush and Moses is like, tell me your name. And God says, I am. I am the source of being. I am the source of life. I am the source of living water that springs up and gushes forth eternally within you. I am that source. She goes rushing off of that point to go back to the village. And then the disciples show up, and they're like, what are you doing talking to a woman? It's a curious moment. It's like it's the one point in the gospel where there's a hint that maybe Jesus was doing something that he shouldn't have been doing. Why are you talking to that woman? But she runs off to the village. And she says to everybody in the village, I have met a man who's told me everything I've ever done. And she doesn't say that as if that's a scary proposition. She doesn't say that as if, oh, here's a man who saw my life and he had contempt and judgment. He's like, no, here's a man who told me everything I've ever done. And I feel free. And I feel liberated and I feel joy. And they're like, well, you're not the same person you were when you went to the well. And so they come rushing to kind of meet this guy. And Jesus ends up spending 2 days in this Samaritan village. I think it's a powerful story about being liberated from contempt and judgment and stigma and being able to step into the well of life. Amen.